If you've been to church, you've heard a couple of sermons. Following Jesus is pretty simple, right? Everyone says the same things. You could boil it down to just listen to Jesus and do what he tells you to do, right? It's pretty simple, right? Okay, great. Or, you know, we have on the wall a really good summary, love God, love people. Easy to remember. That's all you got to keep in mind. You'll be okay, right? Or I've been reading a book. I would recommend this by John Mark Comer called Practicing the Way. He talks about how, well, Jesus is my rabbi. And so if you're following a rabbi in the first century, what you do is you be with him and then you become like him and you do what he did. I like that. That's pretty simple. I can do those things. Be with Jesus, become like him, do what he did. Right? Now, how many times have you heard a sermon and you're like, yeah, all right. And you go out the next day and you're like, this is complicated. You know, we all have unique factors that make actually applying this stuff hard. We just spent 14 weeks in the book of Hebrews, and I really loved it because Hebrews has lots of fantastic theology. And theology is important because it affects the way we act. It affects our beliefs, change the things that we do. But sometimes we hit little snags, right? Sometimes we need a little missing manual. I've got a little clip here from a show where someone's explaining something that sounds like it should be really simple. Can we play the cheese clip?
The next step is to fold in the cheese.
What does that mean? What does fold in the cheese mean?
He folds it in.
I understand that, but how do you fold it? Do you fold it in half like a piece of paper and drop it in the pot, or what do you do?
David, I cannot show you everything.
Okay, well, can you show me one thing?
Here's what you do. You just fold it in.
Okay, I don't know how to fold broken cheese like that.
And I don't know how to be any clearer. You take that thing that's in your hand, and you...
If you say fold in one more time...
It says fold it in!
This is your recipe! You fold in the cheese, then.
Don't you dare.
You fold it in.
You just fold in the cheese. Have we all been there at some point? Someone's like, well, obviously, you just follow Jesus. And you're like, how do I do that? But how? You know, sometimes someone says, getting healthy is easy. You just need good diet and exercise. And you're like, diet and exercise. Okay, what's a macro? I'm looking at these weights, and a little technique is helpful. Some of the stuff isn't rocket science, but if you don't know it, it might as well be, right? And so what happens a lot of times for a lot of us, we start following Jesus, we get really excited, and we're motivated, and we're looking for him everywhere, and we're open to trying new things and learning, and then after a while, we kind of feel like we've arrived. I know about church, I know about Jesus. And sometimes we start making excuses for things. I know I'm supposed to do that. I did that yesterday. I'll get back to it. Where this gets really dangerous is where we start looking at others and saying, well, you know what your problem is. And we don't notice the plank in our own eye, as Jesus said, right? So some of us have been following Jesus for a long time and know a lot about what are sometimes called spiritual disciplines. And so maybe there's something new in here for you, because I know every time I look at spiritual disciplines and study them, I'm like, I've never actually tried that particular thing, right? But even if there's not, I hope that this will be an encouragement to check in with yourself and re-engage with Jesus in ways that you haven't for a while, because that's just how it goes. We walk with Jesus for a while, and then we get a little lazy about it. We get a little lackadaisical. We don't put as much diligence. We're not trying new things as much. And so one thing that's really helpful when you're figuring out how to practically do this is something that sometimes it's called a way of life or a rule of life. In the book here, Comer talks about a rule of life, but it's not, he didn't come up with it. That's been around for 2,000 years. The word rule is from the Latin regula, which is like a straight piece of wood. Like, think about a ruler. So if you want to draw a straight line, you can try to freehand it, but it helps if you have some structure. A straight piece of wood is also what you would use for a trellis. So if you want to grow a grapevine, you don't want to go on the ground, but you want to grow up on this trellis. You want to provide some structure. And so what we want to talk about today isn't a bunch of rules for the sake of rules. It's We want to see if, what would be a helpful structure for the vine that Jesus is growing to grow on. You know, it's interesting in the creation account that Jesus, that God creates the world and he creates spaces. He creates light and dark, creates land and water, and then he fills those spaces on the subsequent 3 days. When he gives Moses the instructions for building the temple, we looked at this a couple months back, he said, build this temple like this, build the space, and I'll fill it. So when we make structure, when we make a space for God in our lives, then we're inviting him to fill it. The thing is, you already have a rule of life. You didn't even know it. You didn't call it that. But we all have habits and patterns and the way we live our life. That's already in place. Now, some of those things are pulling us closer to Jesus, and some of those things are pulling us away. So what I want to ask you to introspect a little bit is, what can we do different? What things can we change about our rule of life, our habits, our patterns that would pull us towards Jesus? And those things are often called spiritual disciplines. So if you want to start, if you want to follow Jesus, you have to start by simply being with him. You got to actually be in the same room, right? By spending time with him. And there's a key way to do that, and it's an ancient practice called Sabbath. And Sabbath comes from the scriptures at the very, very beginning. You have creation. God creates the world in 6 days, and then in Genesis 2, he gets to the seventh day. And it says, if I can turn to the page here. The heavens and the earth were completed with everything that is in them. By the seventh day, God finished the work that he had been doing and ceased on the seventh day all the work that he had been doing. And so he blessed the seventh day and made it holy. That word cease is the same word, Shabbat, was the same word we get Sabbath from. And that's literally what it means, to cease, to say, that's enough. We're going to stop there. First thing we need to know about Sabbath is it means we have to stop doing whatever we were doing. Now, scientifically, it turns out we need this rest, right? They did studies that showed that if you work 70 hours a week, you don't get anything more done than if you work 55 hours a week. There's a point at which you need to take a break. One point after the revolution in France, they decided for better productivity, we'll go to a 10-day work week. Guess what happened? Productivity went down. Turns out we need a break a little bit more often than every 10 days. Jesus invites us to trust him every time we take a break. Because, you know, it's one thing to say, well, God rested. You know, doesn't he have more to do? Well, it turns out if God can rest, so can you, right? But you're trusting him that in that time where you're not being productive, that he's going to provide for you. It can be a little bit stressful because we all have more on our to-do list. Do you ever go to bed and go, that was it? I checked off the last item. I can now go to sleep and not do anything tomorrow. Has anyone done that? I would like to. I would like to know what that sounds like. There's always another thing that we got to get done, probably urgently. And yet God says, why don't you just cease for a minute? Why don't you just stop for a day? We go, but I'm going to get further behind. And so he asks us to trust him to provide in the interim. God reminds the people of Israel, you've got to keep doing this in the Ten Commandments. It's one of the Ten Commandments. And so in Exodus 20, he says, remember the Sabbath day. You didn't forget already, did you? Remember the Sabbath day to set it apart as holy. For 6 days you may labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male servant or your female servant, or your cattle, or the resident foreigner who is in your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea, and all that is in them, and he rested on the Sabbath day. And therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and kept it holy. So it's interesting, if you read the rest of the Ten Commandments, some of them have little notes with them. Some of them are very simple. You shall not murder. That's the whole commandment. This one gets like this whole paragraph, this whole explanation, right? In fact, by content, it's about 30% of the Ten Commandments. And so apparently this is pretty important, and he's like, you need to know some extra things about this. One thing he says is to keep it holy. Holy means to separate, to keep separate for a specific purpose. And so we not only need to stop whatever it was we were doing, we need to do different things on the Sabbath than we do on any other day. That's what makes it holy, is when we do something special with God on the Sabbath. The other thing that Exodus reminds us of is that God created the world with this rhythm, with this pattern. There's so many different kinds of Sabbaths in the Torah. He talks about a Sabbath of years. Every 7 years, you got to take a break. Every 7 years, every 49 years, you have a really big break. This rhythm of rest is building in anticipation to the eventual rest that God wants to bring us to. And so by participating in Sabbath, we're participating in that future rest. We're putting our faith in the rest that Jesus is leading us towards. But in Deuteronomy, it's interesting, he repeats the Ten Commandments, and in this one he gives a different reason why you should remember the Sabbath. He says, recall that you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there by strength and power. That's why the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. See, this is 40 years later, a whole new generation that didn't grow up as slaves in Egypt. He's reminding them, you came from slavery. Don't go back there. You've got to keep on remembering the Sabbath so you don't become slaves again. We've got to break free from this Egyptian mindset of accumulation of things, of pursuit of productivity, cultural obsession with productivity. We've got to trust that God's enough. And so from this point on, the Hebrew people have observed Sabbath, starting at sundown on Friday, lighting a candle, saying a prayer, having a meal, and then they sleep. Isn't that great? Their days begin at sundown, which means the Sabbath begins literally resting our bodies with good food and sleep. Jesus, of course, observes the Sabbath, but he says something very interesting. In Mark, the Pharisees get a little bit upset with him because his disciples are picking grain by the side of the road and munching on it because they're a little hungry. And they're like, that's illegal. And he reminds them, you're missing the point here, because the Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. For this reason, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. So Jesus has a pretty high view of the Sabbath. If he's Lord of the Sabbath, it's pretty important. And this is where, when we talk about a rule of life, when we talk about following Jesus, we can wander off the path into one of two ditches. So I got a picture up here. If you're driven down a road and there are deep ditches on each side, and let's keep it on the straight here. On one ditch is legalism. The Pharisees have gotten really obsessed with putting in rules about this is how many steps you can take on the Sabbath day, and this is what counts as work. This doesn't count as work, but that does. Well, you're picking grain, so that's harvesting. Well, I mean, harvesting's usually backbreaking work. This was just munching on the side of the road, but technically that's wrong. So they put all these rules. Those rules, that's not what we want to do today. We don't want to adopt a list of rules that's burdensome and takes us into that ditch, right? On the other hand, we don't want to become lackadaisical and say, well, I believe that observing the Sabbath means not having any rules, and so I'm not going to do anything in particular, right? We start to get lazy about it. We fall into that ditch. What we want to find is, what are the rules that work for us, that are life-giving, that help us to actually benefit from this thing that God has commanded. So the thing is, Sabbath is a gift for us, right? It's something that's meant for our good. Now, I think some of us would probably argue with God if he told us to go get ice cream. I mean, some of us just like to, you can't tell me what to do. God's commanding the Sabbath because it's good for us, right? It's better than eat your broccoli. It's actually meant to be enjoyed. I mean, I enjoy broccoli, but And it means more than going to church. Growing up, when someone said something about the Sabbath, when you heard a sermon on the Sabbath, it was all about going to church. And going to church is a great thing to do on the Sabbath. But that's not what it's actually about. That's one thing that's helpful. You can really get obsessed with rules. Some people formed a whole denomination around the idea that, well, we have to have a Sabbath on a Saturday because that's when the Sabbath has always been. Now, Christians bumped it to Sunday when Jesus rose from the dead on Sunday, and so they would worship in the synagogue in the Sabbath and have the Lord's Day on the Sunday, and then as Christianity spread beyond the Jews and became a Gentile thing as well, the Gentiles didn't go to synagogue on Saturday, so they just worshiped on Sunday, and that's the tradition that we've inherited. Now, Marissa and I tend to do a lot of work on a Sunday, so we take our Sabbath on a Monday. The point is not the rule. The point is that we're taking a consistent day off that's beneficial to us, and that's the rule that we need that's helpful for us to experience what Jesus wants to experience, because he didn't come to bring us more rules. He came to bring us rest. His invitation to follow him is not just an invitation to join what he's doing to love and heal the world, but it's also an invitation to experience that healing and rest. Like he's told us, the Sabbath was made for people. John Comer says, chronically exhausted, sleep-deprived, over-busy people are not loving, peaceful, and full of joy. That sounds true. Or what Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. We just studied Hebrews. Hebrews reminds us, for the one who enters God's rest has also rested from his works, just as God did from his own work. Therefore, we must make every effort to enter that rest so that no one will fail by following the same pattern of disobedience. So we've got to make every effort to enter that rest. It doesn't sound great. And this is the point at which, in every sermon, I say, great, but how? Okay, that was a participant. That's great. But how? Okay, thank you. All right. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this series, is but how? How do you actually apply these things and get the things that Jesus wants to give you? There's a lot of ways that we can participate in Sabbath. One way is by unplugging. Paul says in Colossians, set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. And in Philippians, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So, why do we spend so much time setting our minds on things of Facebook, things of anger, and things of argument, and all the different disputes we get into? What is influencing you the most? And I don't mean, do you watch movies with swear words? Like, I'm also not convinced that smart people actually spend time posting on Facebook. It's just a theory I have. You're like, wow, I heard this on Facebook. Was that a smart person? Because I think they have better things to do. I don't know. Sorry. What are we setting our minds on? Can we unplug from all these different media sources and set our minds on something better? You know, even Christian programming isn't the same as listening to Jesus. Can I just tell you that? There's some things that are under the Christian label and from people who say they're Christian, and you know, I'm sure they have some value, but it's not the same as hearing from Jesus. We can get too fixated on a handful of influential Christian voices and miss the broader Christian tradition. We can miss what Jesus is saying through his whole church. So letting God influence you doesn't mean that you have to spend an hour in Bible study and prayer for every hour of TV you watch. It's not really what I'm saying. It might mean that you spend more time in nature. Touch grass, as the kids say. Or it means that you spend time with loved ones, with friends, you know, the image bearers of God, because when we spend time with our loved ones, we can share God's love between us, right? So the first step to unplugging is just to be aware of what's influencing us and what do we need to step away from. And then, as with a lot of spiritual practice, some of this stuff takes preparation. You can't just up and have a Sabbath because, well, what are you going to eat? Well, I'm going to have to cook. Well, aren't you resting? In fact, I don't know about your oven, but my oven has a special mode. If you're an Orthodox Jew, you can press the button and it will automatically come on the next day so that you don't have to press anything. You can just put the stuff in the oven and it'll come out cooked. Isn't that cool? Because they're prepared. You know, that may be a little bit too extreme on the legalistic side, but I think it shows the kind of thought that we need to put into it, right? What do I need to do to set myself up for success when I'm taking my rest, when I'm unplugging? Do I need to check my emails, respond to things the day before so that I can put it away and don't have to look at it? Do I need to set up the Screen Time app so that it won't let me launch Facebook or that news app or whatever so I'm not distracted, right? We can do that during the week. We can practice during the week unplugging, having no phone times. I personally have been really trying hard not to look at my phone first thing in the morning. Does anyone do that? I won't ask for raise of hands. I won't ask you to out your stuff. So if you wake up and, you know, I guess I'll get up and you like stare at your phone. Does anyone do that? I won't ask you to out yourself, but I know I've can easily get into that habit. So what I've started doing is I have to take a pill for my thyroid. I put the pill bottle on my phone. It does two things. I remember to take the pill, and when I reach for my phone, I go, oh, no, I'll wait till later. That's an after coffee thing. Just these are little things, right? This rule may not be the rule you need. We're not here to give you rules that we're going to legalistically follow. We're saying, what rule do I need to help me do this thing that will benefit me, right? What structure do I need that will help? And so maybe you use the little Screen Time app to just limit your screen time during certain hours. You know, the thing is, some people are like, no, I have self-control. I don't need to do that. But we don't want to overwork our self-control because it's an important skill. We want to develop it. We want to have more self-control. But it's also a finite resource. If you're using your self-control all day long, it will literally wear you out, right? And so if we turn it off and put it in the drawer for a day, that limits the amount of self-control that we need because we've put a barrier between ourselves and doing that. It's not that impulse thing. We're like, oh, I'd have to get up. Nah. Right? Or maybe you need to delete that social media or news app altogether, and then you won't be tempted to launch it every 20 minutes like I am. So unplugging is a great way to have a Sabbath. It's a great way to start. Another great practice is slowing. It just means going slowing. You know, when someone asks me how I'm doing, you know what I say way too often? Oh, busy, good, but busy. And I realize that's not what I want to say. But I say that because there's always something else to do, somewhere else to be. And I kind of have had a little bit of an obsession with efficiency. If anyone's gotten in the car with me, a lot of people have pointed this out. I have this whole muscle memory thing where I can both hands. One hand opens the door and the key and the thing and the gear shift and I'm going. I've got it one continuous motion. I can go from outside the car to driving down the road in approximately 2 seconds. It's kind of scary. That's great and all. But slowing means instead of go, go, go or doing things with both hands, we're going to take our time. We're going to walk slowly. All the frantic activity, running just to catch myself, if anyone remembers that song. That all prevents us from growing. You know, when you're exercising, you have to give your muscles a break to help them recover. You gotta have some slow times. You can't always be pushing at full blast the whole time. You know, Jesus never seemed to be in a rush. In Mark 5, he's on the way to healing a dying girl. Please come quickly. My daughter's dying. You'd think he could hurry a little. But he didn't. And this woman comes up, touches him, and is healed from this disease that's affected her for 20 years. And he pauses and he says, "Who touched me? I felt power go out." And he has a conversation with her. And the poor girl's father is like, Can we please? This is nice, but can we please? And a servant comes out and says, "It's too late. She already died." And he's like, And Jesus says, "Hey, it's all right. We're going to take our time. We're going to get there when we get there, and it'll all be okay." That takes a lot of trust. You know, when asked to how to grow as a Christian, the theologian Dallas Willard said, "You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." A great way to do that is with the Sabbath. Just start by slowing down. I try to do that now when it's our Monday. I try to just take it a little bit slower. Take the slow lane. Take the long way around. If that's too much for some of you, or I can't take the slow lane. Well, try driving the speed limit and actually stopping at the stop sign. So that might be good for a couple of you. Some of you need to know that. Do something that takes some deliberation, takes some deliberate effort. I like to make gumbo about this time of year. And gumbo means you've got to make a roux. And roux means you stand stirring a pot for about an hour, which is why I don't make it that much. But it's an amazing way to slow down everything. Just say, "I'm just going to stir this pot for an hour. I'm going to make really good roux. I'm just going to be here." Maybe you look around, take in the world, look people in the eyes, let someone go ahead of you at the coffee shop. You're in no hurry. They can go ahead and jump in. Be okay with just being late. Or if you really hate being late, maybe plan ahead so that you're way early, so that you can just show up and be. So you can be unhurried. You're not rushing in to get into the church, but you can be here 15 minutes early, have a cup of coffee, and have a conversation, and we don't need to rush. And if you're running a couple minutes behind, it's fine, right? Because we want to be unhurried. We want to practice that slowing so that we can start thinking in terms of what rest really looks like. On our Monday, on our Sabbath on Monday, I really hate for anything to have a scheduled time. It's fine to plan to do a couple of things that are fun, that I enjoy, but I hate for anything to be at a specific time, because then I feel like I have to be a little bit more focused and intentional, and I've got to rush a little bit to make it on time. If we're going to do something sometime this afternoon, yeah, we can just go slowly. We don't have to rush. Maybe when we practice slowing, we develop self-control and patience, actually, which is going to help us with other spiritual practices. We can become contemplative. The third thing I want to suggest about Sabbath, and then the last thing I'm really going to talk about today, is delight. The whole point of Sabbath is to enjoy life and our relationship with God. You know, take a moment to savor a really good cup of coffee or a good meal. Instead of just gulping it down, just enjoy that. I mean, Darkhart's had a really lovely, a Himalaya roast in the last week. It's a good practice just to sit there and, oh, that's nice. What Ecclesiastes says is, "To every man whom God has given wealth and possessions, he has also given him the ability to eat from them, to receive his reward and find enjoyment in his toil. These things are the gift of God." You can find something creative that you enjoy. It's life-giving. As the song we sang quoted Psalms, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." Or Isaiah, "All who are thirsty, come to the water. You have no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without cost. Why pay money for something that will not nourish you? Why spend your hard-earned money on something that will not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is nourishing. Enjoy fine food." God's comparing his presence, his voice, to a wonderful meal. He's saying, yeah, enjoy that wonderful meal, but also the spiritual meal is even better. Come to me, and I will give you rest. And so, Sabbath is more than a day off. It's a day to be consciously present to God. It's not a day for catching up on errands. you know, I've drastically reduced the number of chores I've done on our Mondays because I felt really convicted that I'm not actually taking a day of rest. I'm taking a day of chores. And even when I still occasionally go grocery shopping on a Monday, I try to practice that slowing. Instead of viewing grocery shopping as a chore, I'm going to go to the grocery store and see what they got and look at the produce and just take my time and listen to a little podcast. It'd be nice, right? As Psalm 37 says, take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. When was the last time you delighted in the Lord? When you took delight in his presence. And that's the goal here, is to find delight in things. God wants to meet you not just at church, even though he will meet you at church many times. He not just in Scripture, and he loves to meet you in Scripture, not just in prayer. He'll meet you there. He likes to meet you on the mountain, in the park, on the drive. And if we start using our Sabbath, our rest day, as a day that we remember what he's done for us and we connect with him, I think we'll begin to delight in him. You know, there's lots of different ways to experience God. We're going to talk about other spiritual practices. Sometimes I feel blocked when it comes to delighting in God. I come to church and I don't feel anything. And I read the Bible and I don't feel anything. And I just feel like I can't sit still and listen, and it's difficult. And so there's going to be some other spiritual practices we'll be talking about that'll help get us closer. But that's the thing that we want to do first and foremost with our Sabbath. It's not just stop, but delight. It's for us. It's for us to enjoy. Just to give you an idea about a traditional Sabbath, it has several elements. They start with lighting the candles, blessing the children, eat a Sabbath meal, and express gratitude. And then there's a lot of activities that occupy the day. It might be singing, worshiping with your church, walking, napping, making love to your spouse, reading, spending time alone with God, and spending time with friends and family in conversation. So that's 12 things, right? All great things to do. Doesn't that sound like a nice day? It sounds like a nice day to me. And so my question is, if you were going to pick 3 of these to do today or next week, that you maybe haven't done in a while, what would you do? Would you plan a walk? Would you plan a nap? I want to plan a nap. Maybe you say, you know, on my Sunday, it's a good day, but I'm always going from one thing to the next. What if I plan to spend 30 minutes with God? And just went somewhere quiet and listened to a song and just listened for his voice. So that's my encouragement to you, is to try this out. Try Sabbath out. And I want to give you a couple of quick notes before we wrap up about trying a spiritual practice. When we have practical things, a lot of times it can be overwhelming. We're like, well, that sounds great. I would love to do all those things. I already have a full schedule. And so a lot of times we have to start by saying no. The whole point of Sabbath isn't to add something more that you need to do. It's to say, what if you stop doing something? So let's start by saying no. Let's not just pile things on top. Let's say, well, what is something that's actually pulling me away from Jesus? I could stop doing that. Start doing this. Don't try to do everything at once. We talked about slowing. We talked about delight. We talked about unplugging. Maybe you're like, look, just take turning my phone off might be all I can do this week, right? That's okay. Add things in slowly. We only want to try a couple of things at a time, because otherwise, it just gets to be too overwhelming. You know, you've seen the quadrant between conscious competence and unconscious competence. And the thing is, when we're learning to do something, we have to be conscious about it. We have to put willpower in. We have to do it intentionally. It takes extra time because we're not used to it. If you've ever done a recipe for the first time and it says 20 minutes and it takes you like an hour, right? Because you've done it before. If you've done it before, maybe it will take you 20 minutes, although I think most of those times are fake. But for someone with 4 hands, maybe. So the more we do something, the more it becomes just sort of natural, and we can do more of these things at the same time once they become a natural part of our rhythms. But we can't start a whole new rhythm with 15 things all at the same time. So don't try to do everything at once. And when we add something in, we want to take a moment after each week to reflect on how it went. Sabbath is key to all of these other practices because it gives us time to reflect. So it's an important one to start with. And feedback loops are important to improvement. When you do something, if you don't get any feedback from it, I don't know, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. When I'm working on the computer, if I have something that takes 5 minutes to compile, I have to wait 5 minutes to see if what I did worked. By the time I find out if it worked or not, I don't even remember what I did anymore, you know? But when it's immediate, you try something, you go, oh, that didn't work. Let me try this. Oh, that works. You hone in on it really quick. But when we reflect, we want to make sure we don't have shame. So you didn't succeed. So it didn't work. Why not? What stopped you? What was the blocker? What could you do differently next time? What might you try differently? So we're invited to go deeper when we reflect. Did that work? Great. Well, there's more where that came from, right? There's more things we could try to enhance that experience. Did it not work? Okay. Well, we'll try something else. Incidentally, putting this together, I realized, I mean, we could spend weeks on the topic of Sabbath alone. So if you're like, okay, I was hoping for some practical things and I only got like three, and I was hoping for, you know, some other ideas, I'm going to post some links on the website because there's amazing books on the subject. There's amazing resources. And so if you want to know more, you can definitely ask me, or you can look on the website when I post it. So we want to start by saying no. Don't try everything at once. Reflect on how it went. And finally, we want to do this with others, because change is more likely when we share with others what we're trying to do. When we say it out loud, that does something in your brain. When someone else hears it, you know, I told them I was going to do that. Kind of sticks in your brain differently. And then they can say, hey, how'd that go? No shame. No, we're not into legalistically holding people to other standards. We're just saying, hey, you said you were going to try that. Was that good? Oh, I didn't get to it this week. Oh, that's all right. You think you're going to get to it this week? What would help you to do that, right? In fact, I would love to start a small group where we learn and practice a different discipline every month together. I mean, just imagine what it would do for our community if we intentionally organized our lives around Jesus through these tried and true spiritual practices. Wouldn't that be cool? So if you're interested, come and talk to me, because I've got ideas, but I want to do it with an actual group, because I think that would help us all to experience more of what God has for us. So that's but how to Sabbath. What I want to do to kind of wrap up here is I want to give just a minute, if you would be willing, to group up a little bit and talk to each other and say, here's one way in which I'm interested in trying Sabbath this month. Can I be bold and ask you to do that? Can you find two or three other people and just say, hey, this is one way in which I want to try to experience God's rest this month? Would that be okay?